Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. And it's my great pleasure to be joined today by James Henderson, who's director of the OIS, to discuss the 10 key themes for 2021 that was included in the OIS Quarterly Gas Review that was published this week on the 20th of January 2021 by the Institute. Jim, great to have you here.
Thanks, David. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Now, James, the quarterly actually starts with the usual analysis of various pricing indicators and key market trends that, of course, show the dramatic changes that have taken place since we published the last quarterly gas review in October 2020. Perhaps, you know, could you share with our listeners kind of a summary of these? So let's start with the energy tightness and the Asian spot price, European gas price spread. What's been happening?
Well, I think that's where all the action's been, isn't it? I mean, the last quarterly, we were just reviewing the fact that the margin for LNG suppliers out of the Gulf, which is measured the highest margin from Asia or Europe, had just gone into positive territory after basically 6 to 7 months of negative margins and LNG shut-ins. Of course, in the last month or so, prices in Asia have shot up, taking to an extent European prices with them. And the margin for LNG suppliers has gone from $1 to $6, and if you look at the forward curve, potentially into double figures. So it's in the short term a huge dramatic turnaround, very, very positive for LNG suppliers. I guess the question going forward is whether that can be sustained.
Absolutely right. Now, last year, of course, European gas storage was key. Now, how's that played out over the last kind of 3 months since we last reported?
Well, it's interesting that storage levels have come down. LNG has been dragged away to Asia. That has had to be replaced. I mean, European gas demand has been stronger this year than we thought it would be. So obviously, pipeline supplies and withdrawals from storage have had to take the place of LNG that's left for Asia. When you look at in our second graph about storage utilization and the forward price, one of the things we've been highlighting is that the forward price for 2021 is actually quite optimistic in Europe, and implies much lower storage levels. Now, at the moment, we are seeing storage levels come down quite rapidly. Again, the question is, will we get just back to 2019, 2020 levels, or will we get back to somewhere near the five-year average, in which case the forward curve could be justified? It's a little early to tell, but the indications at the moment are, that storage levels are coming down to levels which could justify higher prices, through most of 2021.
And of course, it's cold weather in Europe, it's cold weather in Asia. And so it'll be interesting to see how low those storage level goes and when, of course, the storage refill starts. But the other thing we've discussing in the quarterly is about the Russian electronic sales platform. What are the messages coming from that?
Well, I think that's another interesting one, is that the price that Gazprom is selling gas on its electronic sales platform has been, one, below the long-term contract price, but two, at times, below the spot price. I think it's a slightly artificial, this discount to the European spot price. Essentially, what Gazprom's been doing is deferring short-term sales, spot and one-month forward sales, and really selling into the kind of three-month and beyond market. Obviously, that's more of a spring and summer market, so prices are naturally lower then. But I think what we've seen is Gazprom not willing to compete in the short term because prices have been so low. If we start to see that change, that will tell us that there's a stronger price environment, that the market's a bit tighter, and that Gazprom's prepared to trade on the short term again. So that'll be quite an interesting indicator. At the moment, though, still they're pushing the sales out to 3 months and beyond, as I say.
And of course, for the last two subjects we discussed as we kind of look at what's happened since the last quarterly published in October, are related to prices in Asia. There's the kind of the JKM versus the contract price, and there's the China domestic gas price versus the LNG import price. We all know the volatility, we all know the high prices. What are the key buttons we're getting from looking back at that period?
Well, I think the interesting thing with the Japan price has been, that the story has been that the spot price has been lower than the oil-linked contract price. And the question has been, when will customers start to demand a change? Of course, now the spot price has shot up. A week ago, at least, the spot price was equivalent to about a 50% slope. So oil-linked contracts were looking very, very good. Again, the question is, at what point do we return to normality? Things are getting warmer in Asia now, But it's been interesting that suddenly oil-linked contracts didn't look quite so silly in terms of price. And so question whether, you know, that debate is slightly being pushed back. In terms of China, the story has been that the Chinese domestic price has been higher than JKM, and there's been questions around, you know, whether that price should be more reflective of international markets. There has been deregulation. We have seen a tightening of the spread between JKM and the domestic wholesale price. This latest spike has brought them as close as they've been really for the last 3 or 4 years. And the question going forward is, you know, whether the Chinese domestic price will now start to reflect the international price more closely for the longer term rather than just during this short-term spike.
Just to timestamp this podcast, I want to let our listeners know that we're recording it on the morning of the 22nd of January 2021, when JKM prices are $8.90, and it's 2 days after President Biden's inauguration. Well, look, why don't we now kind of move forward to the primary part of this quarterly, which is talking about the key themes for 2021, which it seems to me, on reading what I must say is an excellent publication, fall into four buckets. You know, there's the global recovery from COVID, there's the Europe-focused issues, which, of course, link into the storage, and I know those two will come in together. There's the other key markets, and we also particularly talk about China and Brazil there, and then there's the energy transition-related themes. So why don't we start with the recovery from COVID, you know, balancing the LNG market. Can you perhaps share the thinking on that theme with our listeners?
Yeah, so, I mean, the fundamental theme is that 2020... for gas demand was not as bad as we had anticipated when the COVID-19 pandemic struck and initial economic forecasts from the IMF came out. Those forecasts have been revised, and so have our gas demand forecasts. And it looks like, you know, global gas demand may only be down by 1 or 1.5% now. But nevertheless, we had the oversupply situation in the gas market. We had very low prices. We had very high storage levels in Europe, the balancing market. And so, you know, the question until literally a couple of months ago was, are we just going to see the same thing in 2021? Of course, the spike in prices, which we've just seen, the very, very cold weather, changed the dynamics in the very short term. And I think what the theme is about is, you know, when you look at the forward curve, which we've sort of touched on, is that still too optimistic? Are we going to see a complete rebalancing of the market? And I think the conclusion we come to is that the answer is that yes, when you look at the fundamentals for the whole of 2021, once we're through this cold weather period, actually, you know, we see a return to an extent of pipeline imports into Europe. We see the continuing rise in LNG supply. We do see demand recovering. We do see sort of 3% growth in demand this year. But still, we do see a market that, unless there is a continuation of this very cold weather, and or extraordinary demand growth in Asia due to economic recovery, a potential for oversupply in the summer of 2021. So I think, you know, what we're saying is that the balance between LNG pipeline supply and storage in Europe still needs to be looked at very, very carefully, because it's going to be interesting to see how that balance works out, either through lower prices than the forward curve suggests, or through LNG shut-ins again in 2021.
Interesting, because of course, you know, the second theme is the European gas storage levels, which were so important. We've talked about that briefly anyway since the last quarterly. So how is that gas storage going to play out? What indicators, what traffic lights should our listeners be thinking about?
Well, we're really looking at where we get to stock levels at the end of winter. So that we know how much room there is for summer injection. You know, how fast are those summer injections as an indicator of where the supply balance is sitting, and at what point might we reach peak stocks again? And I think this is where we come back to this critical issue of if stock levels have to start rising again in the summer because LNG supply keeps coming to Europe again, then prices are likely to fall, of course, and are likely to be lower than we're currently seeing in the forward curve. If stock levels stay down at slightly lower levels, perhaps somewhere near the five-year average, then that will imply that prices can be higher, but it will also imply that it's likely that LNG has been shut in. So watching that balance is going to tell us very much what's happening in the market. And also, of course, the other balancing item is pipeline supplies from, you know, from Norway, from Russia, etc. So those three elements are going to be critical, and storage in Europe, the balancing market for LNG and pipeline gas, if you like, is going to be critical in telling us what's going on.
Actually, I was just about to move to pipeline gas, because, of course, the third theme that we see in the quarterly is the outlook for Nord Stream 2. So, you know, what is the outlook, you know, and when, perhaps, will we see first gas arriving in Europe?
Well, the outlook is rather dependent on what happens with the US administration, because sanctions have been what has been undermining Nord Stream 2 over the past 12 months. And we've seen delays, we've seen increasing levels of sanction threats from the US authorities and companies involved, both in the physical laying of the pipeline, but also then the certification, potential financing, insurance, all pulling back and undermining the project. Now, you know, the ships, the pipeline ships are there. The pipe could certainly physically be laid. And certainly, you know, the European Union has expressed some concerns over the impact of US sanctions. I think the author of this piece, Katya Yefimova, is relatively confident that the pipeline could go ahead in 2021 and could be completed, and that we might see first flows in the winter of 2021-22. I think one has to have the caveat, though, that we'll have to see what the Biden administration does around sanctions. You know, if the threat remains, that you can't discount the fact that there could be delays, which could, of course, in turn, coming back to our original theme, impact Russian flows into Europe. Because if Nord Stream 2 is not there, Gazprom will have to negotiate for more flows through Ukraine at higher cost. And, you know, there's a political dynamic there as well. So I think it's critical to watch Nord Stream 2, not just because it's interesting to see whether it goes ahead or not, but because it could affect that balance of supply and demand in Europe during 2021.
That's interesting. And, well, of course, the last bucket when we talk about Europe is, in fact, our kind of fourth theme, which is coal. And so the theme being, will 2021 be a catalyst for the ultimate phase-out of coal in Europe? So, you know, how does that play out? Is that just solely a demand-related, or is there an environmental-related? What's the purpose of that theme, and how do you think? What do you think it's going to kind of see?
Well, there's been a very sharp decline of coal in the electricity mix in 2020, driven by low electricity demand, but also by and rising renewables, but also by low gas prices. So we actually saw an 18% decline in coal demand in 2020. Now, the higher gas prices, a recovering economy has seen that decline in coal slow in the short term. But there is an underlying theme which is going to carry on, which is driven by environmental concerns, driven by regulations to shut down coal-fired plants, regulations around, you know, carbon pricing as well, of course. So I think we see the underlying theme continue. We may see a slight hiatus in 2021 due to the, you know, the potential recovery in electricity demand and the impact of higher gas prices, but we see the overall theme continuing. So I think through the 2020s, generally, we see coal continuing to be removed from the mix. The impact on gas demand will diminish because a lot of coal is already gone. But nevertheless, it will continue to have an impact, even if there's a sort of, as I say, a short hiatus in 2021.
Is it price? Is it price that's going to decide the coal, or are there just the simple fundamentals of the energy transition?
The fundamentals of the energy transition are the underlying theme, and that's why over the decade there will be this continuing to decline. I think price is a short-term dynamic, which means that, you know, over perhaps the next 6 months, we could see a little recovery in coal because, you know, the economics caused by higher gas prices mean that coal comes back into the money again. But the underlying theme remains decline.
Okay, well, look, why don't we kind of move away from Europe as we start talking about the next two themes in this quarterly, you know, and as part of that, there's kind of two country-focused themes. There's firstly, there's China, which is the 14th five-year plan and China's golden age of gas. And secondly, there's South America, particularly the Brazilian market, liberalization of the Brazilian market, challenges and opportunities. You know, perhaps let's start with China. What is the background to this theme?
The background for this theme is the publication of the 14th five-year plan in March this year. And the critical question is, you know, what How will gas be discussed in that 5-year plan? And there appear to be a couple of policy priorities which could drive the outlook for gas. The first is this acceleration of the country's low carbon transition. Obviously, we've had an announcement of the sort of net zero target by 2060. The second is energy security. I think with the pledges for carbon emissions to peak around 2030 and carbon neutrality by 2060, that looks positive for gas. In the longer term, clearly gas is a hydrocarbon, same issue as Europe. But in the short term, the potential for displacement of coal is clearly enormous. And therefore, the 14th five-year plan could help us to understand whether there are some specific targets to 2025, what the Chinese government's plan for gas is over the next few years. There's some interesting targets out there for gas demand rising. But then we come into the second one, which is energy security. And this is where you get to imports and domestic production. So clearly there are concerns around being too heavily dependent on imported fuels, trying to find the balance between pipeline imports and LNG, but also importantly, domestic supply. And there are some important targets for domestic production. And it'll be interesting to see whether the next five-year plan kind of emphasizes those as well as the need for gas to play a larger role in the Chinese energy economy.
Interesting. And then let's move our interests to the other side of the world, Brazil. Why is that being included as a theme in this year's quarterly?
Well, Brazil has been one of those kind of gas markets where one of those energy markets where gas has not played a big role, and gas has mainly been imported from Bolivia, in fact. But there has been this huge discovery, these huge discoveries in the pre-salt and a lot of associated gas which has been used to date for reinjection. And we've also had the situation where Petrobras has been the dominant player in the market, little third party access, little competition, little deregulation. But the government has introduced over the past few years the kind of gas for growth plan and the new gas market plan in 2019. And now there is a gas law which is seeking to liberalize the gas market, to break Petrobras's dominant position, to allow third party access, to encourage more deregulated pricing. And it looks like 2021 is the year when the Chamber of Deputies may well be able to pass this gas law and really boost the prospects for gas demand in a more liberalized market in Brazil. So I think it's important to watch Brazil, because this could be the year where the opportunity for gas in a deregulated market really takes off.
Okay, well, look, why don't we now move to the third kind of bucket, as I call it, that includes three themes related to the energy transition. So let's go through those. Now, why don't we start with the kind of the whole COP26 catalyst? Is that going to drive significant global decarbonization commitments?
Well, the point we've raised in our theme is that, yes, it could well be a catalyst. We've seen a lot of promises, in fact, an accelerating number of promises. We've got the Chinese commitments we've already mentioned. We've got the Japanese now talking about net zero emissions by 2050. We've got South Korea. We've obviously got the new Biden administration. We might talk about that in a minute, and their potential to re-enter the Paris Agreement. And we've, of course, got a lot of pledges and legislation and strategies coming out from the EU, as well as discussions from UK and Norway. So the question is whether we can see some of these promises being turned into concrete action, and whether COP26 in November will be the catalyst to make that happen. So, there are expectations around, renewables. There are expectations around hydrogen. And I think, we're asking a similar question to one we asked last year, which is, when will we see this turned into action? And we're hoping that COP26 could be that catalyst.
I think a lot of people around the world are hoping that, I have to say, Jim. But it's interesting because you mentioned the Biden administration. So why don't we kind of, for a couple of minutes, just jump to our 10th theme at this point, which is what should we expect from the Biden energy climate policy? Can you perhaps give us an insight as to OIS's thoughts on this?
Well, I think what we can see straight away is that Biden has brought back environment and the US as a key international player in that discussion as part of one of his initial initiatives. We've seen him signing executive orders to rejoin the Paris Agreement already. We've seen discussions about Keystone Pipeline, and we've seen discussions at least about drilling and shale gas drilling. I think one of the other major themes that we think he will focus on, though, is methane emissions. The US shale patch has been criticized for the level of methane emissions and venting. I think, given what we've seen from the EU and its methane strategy, it'll be very interesting to see whether the US picks up that baton, whether there can be some kind of joint ambitions, targets, and real action on that theme, because I think that can be where the US makes an initial and very positive contribution. So I think, early days, but initial look seems positive, and I think methane emissions could be a clear win in the short term for the US.
Well, why don't we move back to the kind of second of our energy transition themes, the prospects for decarbonisation legislation in the EU. Is this likely or not?
Well, I think it's interesting. The author of this, Alex Barnes, told me he had a table and a timetable, and I asked him actually to write about it rather than a list. But it is interesting how many there are. I mean, we have the European Climate Law, which is perhaps, the most important to make those net zero targets and the new target to reduce emissions by 55% from 1990 levels by 2030, put them into law. I mean, that would be a key first step. We've then got the potential revision of the emissions trading system, which will be important, and the potential interaction between that and the other important issue, which is carbon border adjustments to avoid carbon leakage. So we may well see that coming to the fore in the second quarter. And then when you look beyond that, we've got the Energy Tax Directive as well, which could impact taxation of electricity. When we've got this implementation as well of the important document I've already highlighted, the methane emissions reduction strategy, and the attempts by the EU to pull in global partners around that theme to try and get sort of general momentum towards methane emissions. We've got the Renewable Energy Directive, which we're looking for to kind of more accurately define and certify renewable energy and low carbon hydrogen, guarantees of origins of the kind of issues that are being addressed there. And then finally, later in the year, we've got the potential revision of the third energy package for gas to incorporate thinking about decarbonized gas. How will decarbonized gas work within a competitive environment in Europe that's already there for natural gas? So I think all these things are there. On top of that, we've got kind of revisions of state aid guidelines. We've got taxonomy regulations, a lot of things on the agenda. I think if we get through even half of them, then we'll have seen significant progress in the EU. But there's real hope that we'll see concrete action there over the next 12 months.
Well, lastly, there's a theme that's very close to Jonathan Stern and my heart, and that's carbon neutral energy cargoes, the need for measurement and verification. Perhaps you could share with us briefly, what's behind this theme?
Well, I think it's interesting that kind of links to the EU methane emissions strategy theme as well. I mean, it's broader than that, though, because we've already seen seven cargoes sold into Asia, cargoes that come with carbon and or greenhouse gas emission offsets. I think one of the key issues that's raised in the piece is the need to verify and to really measure accurately what the emissions are and what is being used to offset them. I think some people have questioned whether this is real trading, real offsets, or whether it's a bit of greenwashing. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether we see more of those cargoes in 2021. Certainly, we'll be monitoring not only whether there are more cargoes, but exactly how those cargoes are defined. What are the emissions and what are the offsets that are being set against them? I think equally interesting, though, is a new initiative sort of linked to that from Pavilion Energy, which has been to tender for LNG with accurately defined greenhouse gas emissions and an attempt to define a methodology around that first point of the MRV is measurement. And I think until you know what the emissions are in the value chain, it's very difficult to know what offsets are required, who should pay for those offsets, and exactly how much you are offsetting. So I think what we'll also be following is the Pavilion process to see whether, one, it is as transparent as we hope it will be, whether it can establish some measurement criterion, which potentially could then become industry standards. We'll see, what they're measuring, how much of the value chain they're covering, and what the criterion are and how transparent they're being and how they're being verified as well, I think is also equally important. So I think that process, which will then potentially link to what the EU are trying to achieve as well, which is exactly the same thing for gas being and other hydrocarbons being imported into the EU. So I think that Pavilion process very important to follow for 2021 as well.
So, 10 themes for 2021, each with a focal point in the OIS gas programme, who, of course, the sponsors can contact if they have a question. How are we going to monitor these themes?
Well, we're going to monitor them through, obviously, our ongoing research. And in the paper, there's the contact details for all the research fellows who, you know, during their research, sponsors are welcome to contact. We'll be, you know, accurately monitoring, you know, things that numerical things like, you know, the LNG cargoes and prices and storage levels, of course. But more generally, you know, in our discussions, both in meetings and webinars and podcasts, we'll be reviewing these things, these topics throughout the year and coming back to them after 6 months, you know, in the summer and seeing what progress has been made. So I think, you know, in our general discussions with sponsors, in our meetings and events, and also in our written research, we'll constantly be coming back to these themes as the critical kind of items that can really move the sector forward in 2021.
Well, Jim, as our listeners know, I always like to end up with a kind of forward-thinking question. So I was wondering if you'd be willing to look into your crystal ball for a minute and share with us how you think any of these themes could play out. And also, you know, are there any themes that could be important as well that maybe missed the cut for the 10 detailed in the paper?
Personally, I think the important ones for this year are how much the decarbonisation agenda moves forward. I think it's interesting to follow prices. And I think, you know, clearly the outlook for prices and the supply-demand balance in 2021 is interesting with its recovery. But I think the real, what we're seeing at the moment is policies being put in place and regulations being put in place, which can set the future for the gas industry over the longer term. And I think the 2020s is a time when we see the outlook for natural gas being relatively positive, but where, you know, the groundwork's being put in place for a future beyond 2030 that could be rather different. And I think 2021, particularly in the EU, if we see these regulations being put into law, and if we see the US start to take a much greater role in the climate debate than it has in the past 4 years, and if we see things like the Pavilion tender really move forward, I think that the decarbonisation discussion and the role that gas can play in a decarbonising world could really move forward significantly in 2021. So that's what I'll be watching out for in particular.
Well, look, Jim, thank you very much for your time. As always, I really enjoyed our conversation on the quarterly gas review and 10 themes for 2021 that, just to remind you, was published this week on the 20th of January 2021 by the Institute. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.